in putting this forum together, people said, well, why are we talking about coal seam gas in Canberra? We're not being affected by it here, and it's kind of out there. But in my mind, there's two very clear reasons why we want to be discussing this in Canberra tonight. One is it's an issue of national significance. We've all seen the coverage in the media. I wanted to have an opportunity for us here in Canberra to hear from people who are on the front line of this issue, who are working on it every day, to share their knowledge and for us to be able to ask them questions. But also, I'm very mindful of the potential consequences that, as a country, we face from this industry, whether it's the impact of water through the Murray-Darling Basin, whether it's an impact on food supply from agricultural lands being overtaken by the industry. It is an issue of national significance, and one that we should all have a concern with. And I think as Canberra and as the heart of decision-making in this country, we need to be exposed to these issues. So that was the first reason. The second is that Canberra is a big consumer of gas. And increasingly, Australia's domestic supply of gas, of course, will come from, if the industry has its way, the coal seam as a source. This has become very clear with the ACT's climate change response strategy, weathering the change, which the scenarios in there, some of them very heavily predicated on having gas as a major part of our transition fuel supply. And so the government is clearly preparing for a gas-oriented future. We know that ACTU have talked about building a 500-megawatt gas peaking station in or around the ACT, whether it's at Williamsdale or more recently suggestions of just north of the ACT. And I was particularly struck when Canberra Hospital came out with their new energy plan late last year, which is great to see the hospital sort of thinking about where their energy will come from in the future. But they were very much predicating it on gas and sort of saying, look, gas is the answer to our climate change problems and it's a reliable supply. And again, that was fine. We disputed how heavily they were relying on gas to start with and whether they should have more renewables in their scenario. But there was no discussion in that scenario of where the gas was coming from. And so I think it's important that as consumers we also take a responsibility in thinking about where our energy supplies are coming from. So that's very much the context in which we wanted this forum to occur tonight. So let me simply get straight into it and introduce our first speaker, Carmel Flint. She's from Lock the Gate and the Northwest Environment Council. Carmel has been a conservationist for more than 13 years, working to preserve important natural areas throughout New South Wales. She's currently the regional coordinator with the Lock the Gate Alliance and is working with farmers to prevent the destruction of forests and farmlands by coal and coal seam gas developments. So let me hand you over to Carmel.
So I was just going to talk about our region in northwest New South Wales and what we love about it and the threat that coal seam gas represents to that area and just the damage that's been done so far just in the exploration phase. And then really just talk about what stands between us and coal seam gas. So I've got a lot of photos, so I'm going to move through fairly quickly. So I'm worried about the time, so we'll see how we go. So I'll kick off. So basically up in our region in northwestern New South Wales, really coal seam gas is targeting our most productive farmlands and our most important bushlands. It's also putting at risk our greatest inland water resources, the Great Artesian Basin and the Murray-Darling Basin. And throwing into the mix, it really also impacts severely on our communities and the resilience of our rural and regional areas. So this is a map of petroleum exploration licences in New South Wales. And you can see we're really the heart of it up there around Narrabri. And obviously there's large areas, but really the northwest, the inner northwest is the core area that's at risk at present. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about two major areas that are basically threatened by coal seam gas in the northwest. The first is the Pilliga Forest and the second is the Liverpool Plains. So the Pilliga Forest is the green heart of New South Wales, basically. It's a beautiful place. A place of refuge and recreation. It's the largest temperate woodland left in eastern Australia. There's been a book written about it about 30 years ago, a famous historical novel which really converted it into a national icon. It says it's busy with trees, with animals and with men. It is lonely and beautiful. It's a million wild acres and there's no other forest like it. It's an extraordinary piece of forest. It's the only place I've really been where you can stand on a little hill and look out across flat land as far as the eye can see. And all you'll see is forest, basically. You can get that on the coast in mountainous areas, but it's extraordinary to look out across flat country like that. It's likely habitat for up to 48 threatened species, including the Pilliga mouse, which only lives in the Pilliga. It's the only place in the world where it occurs. It's endemic. And also many other threatened species like the eastern pygmy possum. It's also a wildflower wonderland. It just bursts into flower in spring, and it's extraordinary wildflower display that it puts on. The pilliger mouse, notably, lives in the best wildflower areas because it feeds mostly on seeds, so it's a bit of a fairy tale story, the pilliger mouse, the extraordinary, beautiful little mouse which lives in the wildflowers. And to add to its incredible significance, it's also the southern recharge area for the Great Artesian Basin. So it's incredibly significant for the future of the basin, and its surface waters are part of the Murray-Darling Basin. Then our other really important area around Gunnedah is the farming areas of the Liverpool Plains. They're incredibly productive, fertile soils, volcanic soils, which are incredibly rich. And they're particularly significant because they get great rainfall all year round. They've got really tremendous aquifers that are very reliable, and they basically really are drought-proof, that area. It can produce food all year round and in even the worst seasons. It's got very diverse agricultural systems, cropping, horticulture, grazing. And it's got these incredibly strong and resilient communities that have built up around this incredible resource. So it is incredibly productive, and it does stand out from the rest of New South Wales in terms of the productivity. So as this shows, there's up to 40%. Yields are higher by 40% of tonnes per hectare of a number of products. It grows wheat and sorghum and barley and oats. It is our food bowl. And this is basically what the Liverpool Plains brings to your table each year, and that's a huge amount of food. So it's an incredibly significant area. So what has happened so far in our region? Basically, all we've had to date up there is exploration and pilot production in relation to coal seam gas. It's been focused on the Pilliger and the Liverpool Plains to date. So we haven't got to full commercial production yet, but we've already had a huge amount of damage, which I want to show you now. We've had 13 saline water ponds developed. This is a massive water treatment plant in the middle of the Pilliger. We've had numerous examples of poor practices with unlined drill ponds from coal seam gas water, with water from their drill ponds flowing out into the environment. We've had the biggest fracs ever done in Australia in 2004, so it was really leading the way in terms of hydraulic fracturing of gas seams out in the Pilliger. And this shows you the kind of damage that you will get to what is an incredibly pristine environment. So if this continues in this area, you'll see those wells spreading out across the whole forest. They're hoping to put in over 1,000 wells just to get started. So this is the kind of damage that is coming. There's been extensive land clearing in the Pilliger, even just in the exploration phase. This is just for 3 wells. Really extraordinary, important wildlife habitat that's been cleared for coal seam gas wells. We've had toxic spills out there. You may have heard about some of it in the media. So what we've seen is that coal seam gas water storage ponds overflow. They get out into the environment. We had to test that because the governments and coal seam gas companies haven't tested it. And a recent big spill, we got out there and got independent samples collected. So we collected independent samples, and our results showed that this water that was now lying around on the floor of the forest was just had heavy metals, a toxic cocktail really of heavy metals, salts, and petrochemicals. So it had arsenic at 21 times, background levels, lead at 25 times, mercury 37 times, and so on. So it was very nasty, sort of toxic mix to have out in our environment. And there was the salts and the total petroleum hydrocarbons were 20 times the original. And as you can see, it basically killed all vegetation in its path. And in the Pilliger, they've been exploring for about 10 years, and there's just been numerous vegetation dieback events from coal seam gas ponds spilling out, from pipelines rupturing, from overflows from ponds. So in the Pilliger, they're also treating the wastewater they produce with reverse osmosis and then putting it into our local creek system, which runs into the Murray-Darling. There's been all sorts of problems with that water. Again, it was left to the community to test it. And when we did test it, we found that it's basically was not of the same quality as the water in that creek system, the natural water. There was a whole heap of ammonia. There was cyanide. There was methane, boron and carbon dioxide. So this is even after treatment. The coal seam gas companies say, you know, we'll treat the water and it'll be tremendous. I think this is the first time Community Group has been able to get access to that water and to test it and to compare it with an upstream sample. And it showed there were major problems with that, which has, you know, high potential for impacts on aquatic health. And also, and most disturbingly, that there really a lot of impacts on animals that really haven't been considered. So in coal seam gas ponds, we found often lots of dead frogs, dead kangaroos. We're concerned about bats, we're concerned about birds, because in an environment like the Pilliga, there isn't a lot of surface water, and wildlife will flock to any temporary ponds or any artificial watering points. And in this case, if they end up in coal seam gas water, which is so salty and thick with heavy metals, then it leads to some pretty awful and slow deaths for the creatures involved. We've also had problems with well construction, leading us to have real concerns about what impacts these wells will have on the aquifers. In the Liverpool Plains, they've put in one pilot production well. It was, you know, their boutique well. They were going to show everyone how well they did it, and they had a major problem. They've got ingress of cement into their flow lines, and they don't know what's going on, and they've had to shut it down. We've had properties devalued so that people living next to this land in the Liverpool Plains can no longer sell their land. They've put it up for auction several times. They've had no bidders, and they have had valuations which show their properties have devalued by at least 30%. And just for a single well in the Liverpool Plains, that's the water storage tanks they've put in. So just a massive footprint in terms of alienating farmlands. And then another extra for the local people is the workers' camps that end up, even in the exploration phase, we've had a number of workers' camps, and they just expand as it gets towards production. So what's proposed at this stage is basically a 1,100 gas well field within the Pilliga. It'll involve 1,000 kilometres of pipeline. There's talk about an export facility either at Newcastle or piping it north to tie in with the current export facilities in Queensland. That'll involve extensive pipelines, compressor stations, roads, truck movements, just a massive industrialisation. And in this case, it'll start in the Pilliga of what is this incredibly pristine and significant landscape. We have had a look, that no one will tell us how many gas wells we're really going to end up with, but we've had a look and extrapolated out from the Pilliga just to that petroleum exploration licence there, and we think that'll be 7,000 wells. We expect at least the same on the Liverpool Plains. We think we're looking at something like 20,000 coal seam gas wells in our area. So I thought I'd just go through very quickly what happens when the community makes a complaint. So what happens when things go wrong? Are gas companies and governments responsive to communities? So we identified large areas of tree death in the Pilliga. We reported it. We rang all the departments several times. We did media. We made presentations to the CSG inquiry. We did more media. We raised money and collected our own samples, and then we put in more complaints. And that's what it took. And this is how the agencies and the governments responded. So they said that tree death was the result of waterlogging, historical flooding, a lot of rain lately, and eucalypts turning the leaves black. So our results, of course, came back and showed that it was arsenic, lead, chromium, heavy metals, salts, and petrochemicals. So when our evidence became irrefutable, and after the national and state media took it up, they changed their tune eventually, and this is what they're saying now. Oh yes, there was a 10,000 litre discharge. Oh yes, and then there was another discharge prior to that that we haven't released previously. And then there was another discharge and another three discharges, and now they've said there was an unacceptable culture within the company that was originally operating that. But basically, it's a huge effort to get any action on coal seam gas. It is basically unregulated, even when the community goes to great lengths. They're now apparently doing 7 different investigations into the Pilliga, but they're all secret and we don't even really know what they're investigating. So it's unlikely they will deal with the multiple serious environmental incidents we've uncovered. So I suppose the question is, given the grave risks that coal seam gas poses to our area and that we've experienced firsthand just in exploration, the question which comes is, what stands between us and coal seam gas? Our laws have failed us, our governments have failed us. And really what stands between us is a locked gate. Farmers are locking their gates, taking direct action to prevent coal seam gas companies from coming in. It's a committed and a courageous populace, and out in the region, people are doing amazing things. It's a strong and diverse alliance. We formed an alliance between over 20 groups out in the northwest, farmers, conservationists. We've got the students from Canberra who come up. We've got people from Sydney. And we're working together to strategically protect our area from coal seam gas, and that's a very powerful thing. And Lock the Gate is forming those alliances on a much larger, on a national scale. So, and then there's you. We need a huge number of people if we're going to protect our country from coal seam gas. And basically, if you love this country, now is the time to stand up for it. There's no doubt about that. And all the beautiful places that are at risk. You know, we're keen to see the sun set on coal seam gas in New South Wales. We certainly think that we have an opportunity to stop this industry. It's in its infancy. Its credibility is in tatters after numerous environmental problems. And the future is in renewables. It's time for a new dawn in renewables. And this is what's happening out in the regions. Farmers are locking their gates to coal seam gas and putting up solar panels. Like, the Pilliga is incredibly significant from a cultural heritage perspective. The Indigenous community up there at the moment haven't been heavily engaged to date. We've been talking to them for a while, and they're just sort of coming to grips with what it involves, I think. But certainly, I mean, the whole Pilliga landscape is incredibly significant, and the risks to cultural heritage, are real.